to welcome you to another episode of Money Matters Top Tips for Success, where I bring on business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives and have them share their top tips for success with you. My name is Adam Torres. You can follow me on Instagram at AskAdamTorres to keep up with my book releases, book tour schedule, all that other good stuff. Love to connect with you there. And as always, if you'd like to apply to become a co-author of one of my upcoming books, just head on over to the website, MoneyMattersTopTips.com, and click on Become an Author to apply. All right, so today I have Richard Beagle on the line. He's a musician, educator, arranger, and educational performer at Dayton Phil, Columbus Pro Musica, Sinclair College, along with other institutions. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Adam.
So quite a treat to have you on today, and for everyone listening, talking to Richard and the kind of the warm up we do prior to recording, and he's like, you know, I'm not a money guy, I'm a musician, and I said, money matters, and this whole movement and this whole thing I'm doing with interviewing people is much bigger than are we, you know, our labels of are we finance guys or are we in insurance or are we lawyers, are we doctors. It's more so about capturing the passion of what we're doing and whatever our chosen calling is and kind of sharing that with others for the benefit of others to learn from. Richard, so that's why I'm excited to have you on today, because I want to get, let's just start with a little bit more of your background of, you know, what inspired you to go into music?
Oh, thanks so much. Well, you know, I think I always had a musical bend. My older sisters played piano with lessons. So in the house, I always heard the music. And I started with piano lessons. But when I added trombone lessons, I gravitated more toward that. I think some of the reason was in the school band, in the lessons part of the teaching there, you couldn't go hide in the back row like I did for my other classes. There were just, say, three trombone players and the band director for those lessons. So you really couldn't go hide in the back row, and you really got to contribute and hold something and do something rather than just sit with a book and a pencil. So that was more engaging for me than the rest of school. Plus, combine that with a musical bend, and there you had it. I was hooked.
So I know there's you know, a lot of people listening to this that are you know, just about to leave college. Maybe they graduated a year or two ago, and they have, you know, they may have been in music programs and other things, and they're really, you know, want to work at pursuing their dream and continuing to keep the music alive. I know that there's different things that pull people from their passion. What kind of advice would you give to that person that's out there, you know, really trying to make a living after college as a musician, and keeping it going?
You'll need perseverance, and since you mentioned it, passion. I think the main ingredient is that passion and love of what you do, because there's going to be ups and downs in the road, and there's no reason to keep going to a practice room and spending time alone when you could be doing other things. But honing those skills really requires the love of what you do to spend that time, and a little bit of faith that you're going to find your niche, even if it's not what you necessarily imagine it's going to be. If you keep following that passion, you'll find a niche in the music field or in the arts that you carve out through your problem-solving skills.
No, that's great. What kind of trends are you noticing, if any, just in general, in performance, in the way music is distributed? It fascinates me, because once upon a time, you know, it was really confined to, you know, a CD, or before that an 8-track, or before that whatever it was, records. And now, just with the distribution and digital distribution, what's that like to you as a lifetime musician? Like, what does that mean to you from your point of view?
Well, I see the opportunity in it, and I know that there's been a lot of growing pains in the music field with illegal downloads and copying music and things. But as technology develops, if you keep up on it, you can release your singles. And people, I'm in a slightly different part of the profession. In classical music, I'm not making pop records or singles, but the technology has allowed more people to own more music for less money, and it doesn't take up space on your bookshelf. So, you know, that's what you can do with the downloads. And I think on the supply side, artists are changing what they do to meet that demand. And you can also make professional sounding recordings at home now, where all the infrastructure of a recording studio is not needed like it used to be. It helps to have those professionals and really do a music studio, of course, but a lot can be done with technology at home.
Yeah, and I think one of the cool parts about all of this in this movement is that where you even mentioned, you know, okay, well, you may not be making pop records, but if you're talking classical or if you're talking about in your genre, I mean, things like scoring movies or scoring digital videos or this open
right.
source, there's a lot of different. So even for someone, for example, where you would have put yourself in this realm where maybe you only had a couple of things you could do with your skill set historically to make money, to keep the music alive and to keep pursuing your passion and what you like doing now, I mean, the amount of video that comes out, the amount of music that's needed from all different genres, it just blows my mind.
Yeah, and people have to change to meet the marketplace and meet the demands and the needs. So in my case, for instance, I grew up, you know, past that elementary school background I gave you, going into college, thinking that I would go into music education and performance equally. And then I got the performance bug. You know, some people play baseball and some people watch it. I wanted to see how far I could go in the performance aspect of the field. And so I would practice and practice for orchestra auditions. And if you win just one of those, that's a really big orchestra job, like the most famous ones you've heard of, it occupies most of your time and practice. And if you get a medium or smaller orchestra, then you have this other time, other free time and financial needs to do other things. And that's where I've landed, in a medium or size orchestra, a medium pay orchestra. And so with that other time, I create these other ensembles and bring music to my community in more independent ways.
Oh, that's awesome. I get it. Like that makes a lot of sense. And it sounds to me like it's pretty dynamic overall, in the way that you're able to explore your field and to kind of operate and maneuver within it.
It really is, because I get to make what I want. You know, from reading up on me a little bit, that I have a couple of my own ensembles and I call to try to get them work. I call around places like libraries and schools and performing arts centers and other institutions. And then I get to tell my band, hey, we've got another job. Let's add this to our calendar. Those groups are that I'm working on the hardest right now, the Greater Dayton Brass Ensemble, who plays as a brass quintet, and in the schools as a brass trio. I write little shows that are hopefully funny and educational that we bring to the kids. The last 2 years, we did musical Mythbusters, riffing on that TV show. And another one was the Trio Trivia Timeline, where kids had to place where recording technologies went on the timeline based on the songs they would hear, like when did the phonograph come out and when did cassettes get invented. And those were fun shows to bring to the schools. And the other ensemble that I'm working hard to help get work right now is the Miami Valley Klezmer Ensemble, where I live in Ohio now, and people have told me, hey, this band would do great in New York or Miami. But klezmer, if you don't know, is old Jewish wedding music that's very exciting. Think Hava Nagila or Fiddler on the Roof as a quick example. But it turns out that out here in Ohio, the population of Jewish people isn't what you'd find in New York or Miami, but we're also the only band of our kind for many miles.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that. It's awesome.
So on the one hand, you might think there's less demand, but
no, there's more.
Really? There's really more. It's good to be the only game in town.
That's amazing. I love it. What a great story, Richard. I knew we were going to have fun. So if somebody's listening to this and if they want to hear more of your music or to follow up, what's the best way for them to do that?
Oh, thanks so much. Richbeagle.com, and my name's not spelled like it sounds, so RichBeagle.com. And if you go to the little tab called Soloist and Ensembles, you can hear the Greater Dayton Brass Ensemble or the Miami Valley Klezmer Ensemble. And both of those groups also have Facebook pages now.
That's awesome. And can you repeat your website one more time, please, for those listening?
Sure. RichBeagle.com, RichBeagle.com there.
All right, perfect.
And
Well, hey,
you'll have to
Rich,
go to.
just want to thank you for coming on the show today and sharing some of your time and your passion for what you do and why you do what you're doing. To the audience, as always, thank you for subscribing and listening to the podcast. Don't forget to leave me a review and do all those other great things we do to support our podcasters. I really do appreciate it. And Richard, thanks again for coming on the show.